Hello everyone, welcome back to another special episode of To The Max. Today we're going to be featuring our second interview with a famous person. Today it is going to be Provincial Health Officer Bonnie Henry. We also think she's a great person to have on the podcast. She's been helping everyone in BC and actually in Canada with dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic, which is one of the most impactful things right now. With that being said, let's get right into it. So I guess first thing is just welcome, and would you like to just like kind of like just state your kind of job, I guess? And
yeah, I'm sure most people listening would
the
know
the full title though. Like, yeah, you know.
All right, well, thank you for having me. I'm Dr. Bonnie Henry. I'm the Provincial Health Officer for British Columbia, which means that I'm the public health doctor in charge of things like our COVID response here in the province.
Yeah,
very nice.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a very important job, as we've all seen so far.
Yeah, I think you've done a really good job of just explaining everything in a calm way.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a critical job that you it's really critical that you explain everything well and like something that everyone gets what the plan is. And I think you've done a fantastic job going into this.
Well, thanks so much. You know, I think that is such an important part of my job, is to take all these complex science things that are really, really important and put them in a perspective that people can understand and that they know what they can do to keep themselves and their families safe when we have, you know, a new virus like this that we're learning about all the time. It just, it can be quite frightening, and having that information is one of the important things to help us stay calm and to know what to do.
Absolutely. And I think I just want to ask, you know, how do you actually deal with like all the pressure that's kind of put into this job? Because everyone's listening. You are like where everyone gets their, most people get their information about this. So how do you deal with the stress of actually like running this entire operation right now?
Oh yeah. Well, you know, other than running away screaming, it has been very stressful for everybody and we're all tired. But you know what? I have a really good team, and this is stuff that I have had an interest in for a long time, and being interested in the science and understanding the science, and then being able to put that in words that help people, and that's kind of the important thing about my job. But for me, the other thing that helps me get through it is having like-minded people that I talk to all the time. So my team is great. We have public health physicians all around the province, and we talk together, and I talk with my colleagues in the other provinces and in other countries so that we can help support each other but also understand what's going on in different places. And then for me, I like to run. That's where I think my nervous and running and meditating, you know. I don't know, do you guys do you learn some of the mindfulness and deep breathing to help you figure things out in school sometimes if you get stressed?
Well, I wouldn't say I'm the most spiritual person, but it's always good to step back and take a few deep breaths every once in a while and just calm yourself down. Yeah,
I'm going to be honest. So I have learned some of the stuff, but I really dislike running. No offense to all those runners out there. It's just not my thing.
Fair enough.
No, you ain't got to find your thing. You know, for me, it's running, but you know, I think of my nieces and nephews, and they're into all kinds of things. Like hockey is one of the big things.
Hey, hockey.
Yeah, hockey.
Yeah. I'm a big Canucks fan, but you know.
Yeah. I heard you were a Canucks fan, Zach.
Yeah, I think maybe, you know. Might be.
Yeah, so I think I want to know just a little bit more about, because a lot of the stuff has been focused about kind of, you know, what you're doing right now. So if you could kind of just talk about, you know, your previous work
before COVID,
before COVID, yeah.
A lot of people just don't look at it right now.
Lots of things that are going on, and you know, public health is kind of in the background a lot of times. The work that we do is to try and keep people healthy and prevent them from getting sick. So we do everything from things like restaurant inspections to make sure that food is safe, handled safely. We do things like immunization programs that protect people from getting infectious diseases. And in my world, I've spent a lot of time in working on what we call communicable diseases. So things like viruses and bacteria that get transferred between humans and between animals and humans. And I've in the past spent time working on trying to get rid of polio in the world. And I spent time in Pakistan and Afghanistan doing that. I've also been involved in one of the more scary diseases, Ebola, helping to solve an Ebola outbreak in Uganda a number of years ago. But I just say these because, you know, the things that we learn from dealing with these types of crises are the things that have helped me in being able to communicate the stuff that we need to hear about COVID too. Because I know when you have an unknown virus and we don't know how it spread and we don't know, you know, who's going to be most affected and what are the things that we need to do, that putting information out there and working together is what's going to help us all get through it with the least amount of trauma, because we know this is really stressful for people and it's hard. It makes us anxious and some of us don't sleep very well, and it can affect our mental health as well. You know, we're not able to get out and do the things that we want to do and have connections with our friends in the same way. So, you know, those are things that I've learned over the last 30 years. I don't feel that old, but that it's really helpful. But the other thing that I've been working on is, you know, we've had a big issue with people who use drugs and people who are dying from the overdose crisis. So we spend a lot of time trying to find answers to that real crisis as well.
Yeah, well, you've definitely dealt with like many different diseases over all the time that you've spent at the health organization, right? So I guess my next question would be, where on, like, if you could make like a scale of all the diseases, where do you think COVID would like lie on that from all of the different ones that you've experienced?
I'm going to guess like Ebola is pretty much at like 10 or something. It's pretty high up.
Or 11. You know what? The thing about Ebola, it doesn't spread as easily as COVID, but it causes much more severe illness in many more people. So there's this balancing. You know, the one thing that about this virus, COVID-19, that makes it tricky, and the reason why it's affected everybody around the world, is that it can spread really easily. Not as easily as influenza, but easier than some of the other things that we see like Ebola. And it can spread in people who do have really, really mild symptoms or don't even recognize that they're ill. And so it can sort of sneak around in our communities, and then suddenly people will get really sick with them and end up in hospital. So it's less infectious than influenza, but it's more severe, particularly on older people. And we've learned that. But we're now getting better on how to protect older people. The one good thing about it is it doesn't seem to affect young people as much. And so mostly, especially people under the age of 19, children and young adults seem to have very mild illness. So that's good. But this one's, I would say it's like an 8.5 or a 9 because it spreads so easily and it's affected so many people. And the other part of it that we're seeing is that the measures we put in place to try and protect our healthcare system and to try and stop the spread to people who are going to get really sick with it have had consequences themselves. So people, you know, are having issues with mental health that we just talked about, but not getting access to healthcare for their heart conditions or other things that are happening. So we need to be really careful. And we know that it has impacts on people being off work and off school and being off school for 6 months. Yeah. You know, some people, it'll take them an awful long time to recover from that. And school is for some children, it's the only safe place or the place where they can get access to food and to medical care as well. So, you know, all of those important things that go with being in school, we know that has effects on people too.
I mean, there's clearly so much to think about when you're dealing with something, especially as complex as just examining all things that you could do. And then it's impossible to predict all the possible outcomes of what could happen and all the, you know, side effects of something. But just before we get anywhere, I just want to ask, is it possible that the more dangerous, like viruses that will kill, like have really high kill rates or whatever. Do you think it's possible that those are actually less infectious just because the people usually experience these symptoms very violently and they can't really transmit them? Is that?
You know, that is one of the things that we're learning. But yes, often viruses that kill people quickly, that the virus needs a human. They can't live outside of, well, sometimes animals as well, but they can't live outside of somebody else's body. They need to, so what they do is they have a little bit of RNA or DNA, so genetic material, and they get into our cells and coat our cell machinery to reproduce themselves in millions and millions of copies and then go out into our bloodstream, and they need to infect others to stay alive. So with the SARS outbreak that we had in 2003, that was a coronavirus very similar to this one, but it made people really, really sick. And it didn't spread very easily for people, between people until they were sick, so we could stop it. And we've actually pushed that one back into nature, so it's not spreading in humans anymore. And we were hoping early on that we'd be able to do that with this coronavirus as well. But this one is just in that sneaky phase, right, where yeah, it can spread really easily.
Without knowing.
Yeah, exactly. And it doesn't make most people sick enough that they recognize it, and or thankfully it doesn't kill people as often. But that means the virus can spread a lot more.
Yeah.
So you're probably kind of like right. It is a bit of a balancing.
It's a hybrid.
It's
an unfortunate hybrid.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Zach,
well, yeah, so obviously you said earlier that you've been, well, it's been a pretty stressful 6 months having to just communicate everything and get all the information out. And so let's just say you take one day off. How would that work for you? Are you still getting like instant calls? Everyone's informing you about all the updates, or does everyone just leave you alone for a day?
Is there a true thing as a day off?
Yeah. Do you actually, well, is it a real day off?
I try to have a day off, and I do have people who take over for me, but it's really hard because we've been doing this for so long, I don't want to miss important things, so they do keep me informed. And yes, I have two iPhones, so I get texts and emails, and I do try and keep up with them. But there are people who can, you know, none of us is indispensable. There's always somebody who can fill in, and we do have a really great team. But I do try and keep on top of it. I guess it's really hard because you know when I've been the face of it for so long, it's reassuring that people hear the same thing from the same person. And I need to make sure that I'm on top of it. I did have 1 week off and my sister came out to visit, but then she had an unfortunate accident and she had to have surgery. So I ended up looking after her.
The 1 week you get off. Wow.
I think, again, just like it might be hard just to avoid it because especially with, you know, being the digital age, anytime you check your phone, you probably have that news somewhere, and it must be weird for you seeing that news because you're usually the one that's working on it, and it'd be pretty hard to stay completely out of it for a break, I guess.
Yeah, no, not at this point. You know, there's just still too many things that we need to keep on top of. And, you know, I'm one part of that team and that's part of what I can do. And yeah, I don't like to be surprised. So, and, you know, as we're going into the fall, it's going to be, we need to be really careful. I mean, we've seen our numbers come up here in BC. But not like what's happening in Quebec and Ontario, where things are going up really, really quickly right now. So that's a real concern. So we need to keep on top of it, and all of us need to keep doing our best to keep things under control here.
Mm. Yeah.
So I'm going to ask a question that is it's a big question, and it's especially important because you are, in a sense, a science communicator. You know, communicating the science to the whole province and even people elsewhere in Canada, you know, just listening to stuff that you said. But I have a question on the front of anti-science. It's a very interesting thing that's going on. And especially in this now digital era, there's been a surprising resurgence in anti-science, despite, you know, everything is so important and connected with science, but there's still a movement to anti-vax and all that stuff. And that's especially for you. Your job is to make sure that people understand the science and follow it, because if they don't understand and follow it, then there could be huge risk, especially if people said that, oh, you know, viruses aren't real, or, you know, vaccines don't actually help. That could be leading to just more spread of the virus, and actually more people could die and stuff. So I want to hear your take on just the whole anti-science thing.
I know. I think that, and I absolutely agree with you. It's been very distressing. And we know that platforms like social media platforms allow people's opinions to spread quite widely sometimes. And in some countries, we look at the United States in particular, it's become very political. And this sort of truthiness, I think, is what somebody called it, where there's a vestige of truth, but it gets twisted and turned into something that is and can be very harmful. So we need to make sure that the correct information, the best that we know, is out there, that we recognize when we don't have all the answers. And I think that's important too, but that people know where to go to get real truth and real the good information that they need. And, you know, here in BC, we have the BC Centre for Disease Control, and we put all of the information up on that website. It's a place to get truth. I think we also need to help each other recognize when things are not based in fact. And, you know, they can take a piece of something that's true, but then it gets twisted, and some of the anti-vaccine people are doing that, and, you know, now there's some anti-mask things where there's some really things that are not based in science and not truth. And one of those things is to call people out on it and say, well, you know, I don't think this is correct, and here's where the correct information is. But to do it in a way that's kind. You know, yeah. We don't want to be adversarial with people. But we do need to take a moment, and all of us, make sure that if we're getting stuff, like I get stuff on Facebook and other places, and you think, okay, why is somebody sending this to me? Look at where the source is, look at where it's coming from, and be able to recognize and not pass on things that aren't true.
The interesting thing though is it's super hard to actually delicately deal with, you know, the whole anti-vax and anything that has controversial views or views that are different from you, because first of all, those views are often seen quite loud despite the amount of people that might actually be saying it, which is, you know, that's why social media platforms allow them to be so loud. But I heard about an interesting study, and basically there was this kind of weird religion that involved some aliens that were going to take people to safety pretty much, and the world was going to flood. And it is a crazy religion sort of thing. And this was done a while back, but some psychologists actually got into this kind of weird religion. And apparently on the night, the aliens were supposed to save them and the earth was going to flood. And the whole goal of the psychologists was to figure out what was going to happen when they realized that the aliens weren't going to come. And basically the interesting thing that they found was, instead of being realizing, oh, we've been absolutely duped, they said, they just basically doubled down and said, wow, we've been saved because we've been so loyal to the cause. And that's the thing, when you contradict people about their beliefs, especially some that they're deeply rooted in or believe very firmly in, it's in some sense.
It can have the counter effect. Exactly. But as you said, you know, it's a very small group of people that become really invested, and their whole belief system becomes invested in a specific belief. And that becomes part of, in this cult that you're talking about, that became part of their narrative and their reason for being in community. And so, yes, when something doesn't happen the way it's predicted, rather than seeing that it might not be exactly what they heard, you become more committed. And we see that with people who, the very small group of people. So if we look in Canada at people who don't believe in immunization, it's less than 1% to 2% of people who have no immunizations at all. But they are sometimes very vocal, and they have very strong beliefs about immunizations and the challenges with immunizations. But most people do, and they just have questions, and there's seeds of doubt, And so being able to address people's questions and concerns in a very rational manner and help them understand, you know, they're concerned about pain. They, you know, you don't want to give your baby three needles, and it's, they're concerned about safety because they've heard things. So being able to be open and talking about it and tell people what you know and what you don't know is one way of bringing people along. But you can't argue with people who have very set beliefs. Exactly. We need to focus on the vast majority of people who need good information. And that's my job and our job is to provide people with good information.
Yeah. And just before we move on from this topic, it's still really a weird place to live with so much information at your fingertips. And it's really hard to tell which is correct. Just especially social media, you have your own custom feed, which is basically just saying, like, you get your own stuff and you could get completely different information from, like, a person that literally, they have the exact same app, but you have completely different, like, feeds, and that means you get different information, you might have completely different opinions, and it's this thing that can sometimes, once you get down that rabbit hole, it's really hard to come out because you keep getting the same information.
And you're right, because some of these social media feeds, especially if you're spending a lot of time on it, you become part of an online community that believes certain things, and it reinforces those doubts or those concerns that you might have. And that's one of the things that we've been looking at across Canada is, can we work with some of the companies to stop being directed into information that we know is untrue? And they're, you know, we still have a lot of work to do, but to make sure that the positive voices or the truthful voices get out there in as much force as the ones that have incorrect information as well.
Yeah. Well, I think earlier you did say you were a Canucks fan. And so me and Max both play hockey and are both very, like, interested in the hockey community. And so I guess I just wanted to ask you, when did the Canucks get to play again? When's the home game coming?
Well, you know what? I don't know. I was kind of hoping that we'd have the playoffs here, and I was disappointed that they didn't make it into the finals, although it's a very exciting series.
Yeah, they had a good run.
It leads to something better in the future, hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I think that we're looking into next year. I know it was, you know, we worked with the Canucks to make sure they had everything they needed to play safely, and across Canada we worked with the NHL. I think it was really challenging for them and really hard for all the players to be in the bubble for so long. But it worked, and it was, you know, it was great. I really hope that we're going to have a vaccine sometime next year and that we'll get a real hockey season in. And I have to say, my nephew was coming out to visit me, and we had tickets for the Canucks game on March I guess it was March 20th.
That's like,
and of course the season was canceled before. Yeah. So I still have tickets that I want to go see them.
Maybe I was interrupting you, Zach, but it's an interesting thing about, you know, the bubble kind of metaphor, because it's really interesting. I think it's really true, because the bubble does protect you, but it is very, it's a hard place to be, and it's very delicate, because if one part of the bubble breaks, the whole thing pops, which is, it's a really, it works really well as a metaphor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Thank you for that. You know, and we all have to, it's a little bit right now about making those sacrifices. And we know it's so important for people to get back to school and to work, because those are things that help us in what we call the social determinants of health. So underlying illnesses, making sure that people have the social connections that they need, our mental health. But it also means that we have to pull back on our social interactions with the people that we would really love to go out and play hockey with, or, you know, have people hang out with and do those things. And right now we have to find a little bit of balance so that we're not putting people at risk.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just with, you know, NHL season, when it comes back, when would we actually get to, like, I'm guessing we probably wouldn't have fans or
at least a full stadium
right away. So,
you know, not right now, and certainly not through the winter. But if we're looking, you know, once we have a vaccine, I think we'll be good to go for a lot of them.
That's the key.
But there's some things that I hope will never change. You know, our focus on how important it is to cover our mouth when we cough and to clean our hands and to stay away from others if we're feeling sick. Those things are things we need to keep going. We need to keep with us because we know there's other diseases that transmit between people. We know that there's going to be other new viruses that arise in the future. The other part of it that I'm really hoping that will never go away is our recognition of how there are disparities in our communities, and some people do better than others. And we recognize how important it is for us to support each other, particularly when we're going through something like this.
Absolutely. I think there's a lot that we can learn from this. And I think, if we do remember some of the lessons we've learned through this pandemic, I think we can do a lot better. Like, you know, we did minimize, like you saw the NASA stuff. I think it was NASA showing the amount of pollution when there was a shutdown. And I think just we're not driving to work as often, I think, and like obviously all the safety and health stuff, and just making sure maybe you don't see your friends all the time, but you can, you know, contact them online. I know it's not the same, but, you know, if you're minimizing the spread, I think we've learned a lot of things, and we've learned how to deal with these things. And hopefully we can plan for something that might be even worse, like another, if there's a more dangerous pandemic, we'll be more prepared. We'll know how to do things, and also just regular things, like hopefully minimizing global warming and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think you're right. We need to think about climate change as we're building back. But, you know, what you're talking about is what we call resilience. And it's, I am so impressed, particularly about young people and how you guys adapt. And you can, and you do. And, you know, I mean, thankfully we have the internet these days, but, you know, we are resilient if we're able to, you know, come together against a common foe and be together and support each other in doing the right thing. And young people will get through this and will be the ones who are going to save the world.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you so
to come
much.
Speak with us. I mean, we know you're very busy.
So I hope you think this was a good use of your time, because, you know, you have a really important job. And I thank you so much for coming.
Well, thank you guys for doing this. I think it's, you know, your voices are important, and talking about these things and how you guys are managing, I think, is great. So thank you for having me.
I would like to wish you a safe and fantastic rest of your day. Yeah. And stay safe.
Yeah.
So guys, I hope you enjoyed that for the limited time available. I'd like to thank Bonnie Henry for coming on the podcast. It was fantastic talking to her. If you guys enjoyed this, please give it a listen and share it with some friends, as well as follow the local health and safety guidelines to prevent the flow of COVID-19, assuming it's still going on. With that being said, have a safe and fantastic rest of your day. Catch you another episode, and make sure to take it to the max.